Hello, everyone. It's Shahid here at the Creative Floor. Welcome to our latest podcast. Please do subscribe to us on iTunes if you enjoy listening to this, and rate us. Rate us 5 stars, obviously. If you're going to go less, don't bother. We have got a superstar today, a bit of an internet influencer. We've got Dr. Draper. Hello. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. I wasn't sure whether I should interrupt and, you know, tell you that was nonsense, but yeah.
Well, the shoe's on the other foot now, so I get to grill you this time. But yeah, obviously your real name's Ryan Warman.
Correct.
But you've got the Twitter account, Dr. Draper. What do you want me to call you? Dr. Draper? Dr. Dre? Ryan?
Doctor at all times. I must be called Doctor at all times.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. Well, where are you actually calling us from today?
Melbourne. Melbourne in Australia.
Melbourne, Australia.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's where I live, yep.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for joining us today. Obviously, you interviewed me early on in the year, and you know, you run your own amazing podcast with Tim Jones, Medicine Avenue, and I think you're quite an inspiration, and as I said as your introduction, quite an influencer, and I just thought...
I hate that word.
I hate it too, actually. It sounds a little bit...
But thank
ridiculous.
You. But nonetheless,
but I can't think of another word because it's Friday and I'm quite tired. But if anyone's got a better word, they can let us
bit
know
of,
what that is.
Bit of a knob on Twitter, maybe. I don't know.
That works. A knob on Twitter. Yeah, we could. Yeah. Well, that's for you to say, I guess. But no, I mean, I'm a little bit intimidated interviewing you because obviously you do your own podcast, and I'm quite a fan of your tweets because you can be quite what's the word, mean, but honest. So we'll see how this goes, I guess. What I think would be really great today, if you don't mind, if we could just get out, like we've done with our past guests, just a little bit behind the person, a little bit behind the brand. Just give us an idea of how you actually got into this crazy industry, the sort of things that influenced you, and how you've become, I think, the person with the most amount of followers on Twitter, which is pretty cool, right?
Is that true? Anyway, yes.
I think it is. Unless there's somebody who's got more, they can let us know. I'll interview them. But I mean, how many have you got?
It's over 10,000 now. I stopped counting after that. Yeah.
Oh no! Well, after this, we'll try and get you another 10,000. So anyway, let's go back to the beginning. Is that okay with you? If we go back to the beginning.
Yeah, all good.
All right, cool. Go on then.
Okay, right. I guess that given that I've been in the situation of interviewing you, I think probably I've taken almost the exact reverse path from what you have taken, and Ollie and Tim and some of those other guys that we're speaking to, in that I came from a healthcare background. And so, I trained in medicine, as I think you know, and I practiced as a doctor.
Where did you do that?
In Perth, in Australia. And I...
So you were a proper doctor? Proper...
Well, yeah,
oh,
I was, right. Yeah.
Oh, right. I thought technically I still am. Oh, right. Yeah. But do you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people have PhDs, but they could be in anything, but they're not like practicing doctors in a hospital dealing with really sick people. Yeah. So you were actually, you're a real doctor.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, medical doctor. And I practiced medicine for about 7 years or so. Most of that was in psychiatry, but obviously, after you've done your medical training, then you need to do a couple of years of internship and so on. And so I did that anyway. And then I kind of decided to make a change. And I'd always been a writer, I think, kind of at heart.
Yeah,
and always loved writing.
So hang on a sec. Can I just ask you something?
Yeah.
So were you, as a practicing doctor for 7 years, were you constantly being bombarded by sales reps trying to sell drugs?
Quite a lot, actually. Not so much when you're in the first couple of years, that they don't bother you because they know that you have no influence. Once you become a registrar, they start calling you and they start leaving messages for you and so on. You know,
well, so what's it like?
Annoying. It's really, really annoying. Only because you're so busy as a junior doctor that you don't have any time for that kind of thing. And, you know, particularly the really kind of earnest ones, you don't have time for it.
What would make you see a rep if you found them really annoying? What would it be?
Persistence.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ultimately, it was just like, you know, or they'd be really, really endearing. You know, they'd give you little gifts and stuff. You know, it's all that kind of classic, you know, the stuff that you think you wouldn't be influenced by, but you end up being influenced by. So, yeah. So it was very, wow, very interesting to move to the other side and think, oh, yeah, fucking, I remember those guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, sorry, we digress. Go on. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. So I kind of, I'd always love writing. Always wanted to kind of, always felt as though, you know, I was kind of a writer. And so I decided to change careers and then
and how old are you when you decided to do that?
I was about, how old was I then? I was probably about late 20s, probably about 20, okay, 29, something like that.
Okay.
And then kind of, you know, I was being practical about it. So I was trying to think about how I could bridge this gap between wanting to be a writer and kind of having this, you know, pretty serious medical background and a lot of study behind me, and you know how I could make that work. And so I started to look into whether there was such a thing as a medical writer, and ended up you know, literally searching medical writer on Seek, and discovered.
So did you know that was a, you know, an industry where people were paid?
Not really. No, I'd asked someone about this, and they said, "Oh, look, there are kind of various medical writer can mean a lot of things," and he was absolutely right. You know, it could be medical journalist, it could be kind of, you know, commercial medical writer, and so on. And I decided that kind of the marketing side of medical writing was probably what I wanted to go into. So I looked for this job on Seek and discovered this job ad for Wellmark as a junior writer, and I got that, and that was 12 years ago. So I'm still at the same agency. So
that's quite amazing, isn't it? Because I suppose you've sort of obviously being a practicing doctor and being, you know, incredibly busy and having a huge amount of responsibility of taking care of people, and you know, you've got a direct relationship with the pharmaceutical industry as well as the healthcare advertising industry in terms of what they do in terms of their marketing materials to essentially get you to change your mind. And then all of a sudden you've kind of gone, well, actually, I love writing and I understand health and drugs and science and smart stuff. Mm. And I'm going to now be on the marketing side. I mean, that gives you such an incredible insight that I don't think I've ever met anyone who's actually made that transition from a practicing doctor. Now, there've been lots of PhDs and all that sort of stuff, but not somebody on the front line who's then come behind the curtain to go, you know what, this stuff doesn't work. This stuff was really crap. And you know, actually, doctors do have a sense of humor, or they can think like this, or you know, they're not necessarily what you think they are, because I am that person, or I used to be that person. I mean, how did that help you? Was it give you an advantage?
Yes, I think it did. And certainly, I think that the agency in taking me on certainly thought that it would be an advantage. So hopefully it has been. And I think that's exactly right. Often as marketers generally, and not even, you know, in the healthcare industry, we tend to make these assumptions about what our customers are like. And that's certainly true. Yeah. You know, you kind of detach yourself from, oh, well, doctors are all, you know, completely rational, and you know, they make decisions on these grounds and so on. And that's just not the case. You know, I mean, as I'm sure that you know, there's a lot of emotion that goes into it, and there's a lot of kind of, you know, the fact that doctors are, you know, they are irrational in the same way as that everyone else is. Yes, I think I was probably more realistic about the way that people respond and the way that doctors respond to communications than maybe people gave them credit for, yeah.
Obviously, you had a passion for writing, but I'm guessing your exposure to the advertising industry as a whole at that time was quite low. Like the prospect of you, I'm making a lot of assumptions here, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. But you know, knowing who maybe Sir John Hegarty was, or who Dave Droger was, or David Abbott, or all these types of, you know, legends who've sort of shaped and influenced the creative industries. What was that journey like for you?
Your assumptions are entirely correct. I didn't know any of that stuff really. It's been kind of it's been a real revelation in what I had to learn coming into it. And now I'm almost a disciple of the greats of the advertising industry. You know, I still kind of hark back to the great campaigns of the 60s and, you know, The Economist and Avis and Howard Gossage and all those kind of guys in VW, you know. It was an education for me.
How did you do, did somebody show you at the agency? Was it something you just found by accident? How did you actually do it?
It was partly the agency. So I had my first creative director at Wellmark she was just incredible. She was extremely knowledgeable and kind of knew a lot about advertising history and stuff. And she kind of introduced me to it, I guess.
Who's that? What was her name?
Prue Oxford, her name was, and she's okay. Just incredible, you know. But she, you know, her general knowledge was off the charts, super smart. But yes, she kind of had a real respect for advertising history, and I think that, you know, that she kind of instilled that in me. But other than that, I probably more recently, I mean, I have been in contact with Drayton Bird quite a lot, and I hope I'm not exaggerating to say that he's a friend of mine now, and he has really kind of reinforced the importance of understanding the techniques of great advertising, and I think that's really kind of stayed with me. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Right. No. I mean, it's never, you know, it wasn't, it was just, I just find that really interesting because you're coming in from it from, as you said earlier, like the complete opposite spectrum of myself. And I always, I've always just found working with people from medical backgrounds just so inspiring because they're clearly very, very smart. And, you know, I just learned so much of them personally. But, getting them to sort of be inspired by, you know, things that I've been inspired by and people that I've been inspired by. I always find it interesting in terms of, you know, how people go on that journey, because you can have somebody, you know, shoving DNAD annuals to people and giving them canned lines, websites and whatever. Mm-hmm. But in the end, if you're not interested in it, you're not going to know anything or be inspired by anything, you know. I always just find it quite interesting. So there's not a right or wrong answer. It's just I just find the journey's quite, or the story's interesting. All right. And so there was never a moment where you just thought, do you know what, this is just all a bit sort of airy fairy for me. I'd just rather get back to making people better.
You know, changing lives and so on. No, not really. There were those odd moments sort of in the early days where I was like, hang on, you know, this seems, where you have to make that adjustment from the really life changing stuff to what is marketing. It is a strange shift. But ultimately I was like, well, you know, this is what I enjoy doing, and the fact that there was that link back to healthcare. And I think, you know, you and I and Tim have spoken about this, the fact that you can still contribute to changing people's lives and, you know, potentially changing people's quality of life and so on. I think that's what probably sustained my interest in it. Yeah.
So do you, this is not a trick question, but do you genuinely think that's true? Like, compared to being on the front line, you know, in a hospital versus being in an air conditioned office somewhere, you know, with somebody going on a PowerPoint presentation about insights and coming up with some great ideas and essentially selling, you know, a big corporation, a PLC's product to basically, yeah, of course you're helping somebody at some point, but in the end, you're just sort of pushing up the share price. That's me being utterly cynical. But do you think that's really the case?
Cynical? I am never cynical, Shahid. So I just want you to know. I find that disgraceful. Yeah. Look, the short answer is, of course, it's not the same. But you know, I think we do have a valuable role to play, and I think Byron Sharp often talks about this. You know, marketers, a lot of marketers understate the value that they create. And it's nothing to be ashamed of to kind of be, you know, to be selling stuff essentially. He's really talking about consumer goods. So I think in the healthcare industry, there's a layer above that. And yeah, I don't think we should be ashamed of kind of what we do. But yeah, if you're saying that we're doing the same thing as, you know, as brain surgeons removing tumors, no, of course not. But I still think there's value in what we do, and I don't think we should be ashamed of it. Yeah,
no, I agree with you. By the way, I was just trying to be an arsehole.
I thought you probably did. Otherwise, you know, we wouldn't.
No,
be
I didn't. No, I mean, I, you know, I did. I don't. I'm sure you know, but I sort of raise the Creative Floor raises money every year.
Diversity.
And I remember one of the years I went down and gave this check down to this little advertising school in Brixton. It's called the SCA. Fantastic organization. They take anyone, whether you're 16 or, you know, 99 years old, if you want to go on a crash course and get a portfolio ready, you know, you can go there and do it. Anyway, I went down there, gave them the check and, you know, told them that they were doing a great job and all that sort of stuff. And there was a bit of a question and answer session with the students, and they didn't really know much about healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously they were there to work at Wydens and work at Nike and all that sort of stuff. So it was good to sort of at least showcase what healthcare can do. And I showed them a reel of work from the industry, stuff that was winning at Cannes and Creative Floor and whatever. Yeah. And I just got a load of abuse from them. And they would just say, yeah, it was amazing. They would just started getting really riled up. And they just basically said, you know, how can you sort of say, you know, this is changing the world when you're essentially just pretty much what I just said to you, you know, basically selling a load of drugs that are way overpriced, and, you know, a lot of people can't afford them, and you're just basically pushing up share value for these big PLCs, and you're kind of looking at them going, you know what Coca-Cola is, don't you?
Yeah.
Like, you know, don't think that if you go to BBH, they're going to be working for the local corner shop. Like, it's like if you've got a problem with capitalism, you're asking
tough questions.
I mean, I tried to sort of explain to them, you know, that's not really how advertising works. I mean, everyone at the end of the day is working for somebody, and profit is a good thing.
Kind of integral to the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, and one little fact that I threw in there, which somebody told me, which made me feel quite nice, well, better when I got having some dark days
not
in
horrible.
Health and whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were saying that how much the, you know, the farm industry actually helps with education around, you know, doctors' developments. And they gave me one example around how having a migraine was something that the pharmaceutical industry actually helped create, because a migraine, I don't know, you probably know this better than me, I'm probably getting this all wrong, but a migraine back in the day was just seen as a very, very bad headache. It wasn't seen as its own thing. Again, it was only through sort of development, R&D, and further education funded by the pharmaceutical industries, because, you know, most healthcare systems run by governments, you know, limited. It's just one example of how they sort of educated doctors to think that it's not a bad headache, it's its own thing, and there were some specific drugs to tackle and target it. And again, that's all part of, you know, doctors' education and public education. So that's got to be a good thing. Of course, somebody at the end of the day is going to make money out of selling a product, but if they don't make money, they can't make new drugs. So life.
Yeah, you know, the pharma industry gets maligned very unfairly, I think. You know, of course they've done some terrible things. But without it, you know, a lot of progress wouldn't be made, and it's kind of, you know, it's a win-win in a lot of ways. But, you know, you can see how from an outsider's perspective it would be viewed that way.
No, definitely. And so talk to me about then, like, the last 12 years. I mean, what was there a main piece of work that you did that made you go, I can do this? Or was there a bit of work that made you go, I don't know if I can do this?
I think probably quite a few of the latter, but I obviously overcame them. There was a bit of an inflection point in a way, when, I don't know, it was probably two or three years into working at Wellmark, where I did some work on our own brand, and kind of I wrote quite a lot of stuff for our website, and it kind of ended up really establishing our tone of voice and, you know, and establishing a bit of a distinctive brand for us. And that's and you know, it was kind of everyone decided, yes, this is what we're going to go with. And I think that really kind of gave me a bit of confidence to realize, oh yeah, okay, you know, copywriting wise, I think I feel comfortable now that I'm a, you know, a decent copywriter, as opposed to just a, you know, a technical medical writer and so on.
Medical writer.
Yeah. So I think that probably, it's looking back now, I think that was probably the point at which I decided, yeah, look, I feel comfortable in being a copywriter. Yeah. And then kind of since that, it's interesting because that kind of led on to, you know, me, I really became the voice of Wellmark in some ways. And, you know, you may not remember this, but we entered our email footer series into the Creative Floor Awards a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah, that was a few years ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so cool. It won, which was a, you know, big kind of thing for us. And that was kind of captured the essence, I think, of our tone of voice and was a bit of a, you know, a bit of a highlight creatively.
So you wrote all of those on your own?
Yeah. Yeah. I basically, you know, almost everything that we put out, you know, of our own brand, it's pretty much me. So yeah, it's kind of.
Because I actually thought you owned the agency because of your surname.
No.
And the agency name.
No. That's a funny.
You should have said, yeah.
It's an interesting point. Because so I spoke at a copywriting conference last weekend, as it happens.
All right.
And one of the people tweeted, you know, great presentation from Ryan Wellmark. The people in our agency are like, maybe you should just change your name. You know, you are now kind of interchangeable with the agency. So, yeah.
Who does own the agency, out of interest?
It's owned by our managing director, Michael Smith. And Candice O'Sullivan, who's our head of strategy, is a shareholder as well. So so we're into our second generation of ownership, which is quite a big thing for us. It's like, you know, we've been going for 20 years, which is which is reasonable for a, you know, for a small agency.
So how do you actually go out and get your clients? Are they all local or are they global, or
interesting question. For the most part, local. So most of them are Melbourne-based. We've got a few Sydney clients. So we kind of go up to Sydney every now and then. But just in the last, literally in the last I don't know, month, we got our first ever global campaign for a client in Switzerland. Yeah. So that's kind of been a pretty big thing for us.
So you went over to pitch in Switzerland?
Well, kind of.
Right.
I was speaking at a conference in Prague, and wow, literally while I was on my way over there, I got this email saying, you know, we're interested to talk to you about this global campaign. And so we decided that I'd kind of do a little detour and go over and see them in Switzerland. So I met up with them, and then we kind of, you know, kind of did our pitch after that. But yeah. Wow. So that's exciting.
So that's cool. So hang on, are you just on some sort of speaker circuit around the world?
I wouldn't go that far, but yeah, I have done a couple of talks. Yeah. One in London last year, and then Prague, and
And how, that's amazing. And do you think how are they getting in hold of you? Is it through
Twitter,
through your reputation on
Twitter? Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's Twitter. I mean, it kind of comes back to that. Come to think of it.
What do they ask you to do? Is it are they different themes, or is it just the same? They ask you to do the same thing.
So the copywriting conference that I spoke at last year, they basically just said, yeah, you know, you can talk about whatever you want. The marketing cool. festival in Prague was fairly specific. It was a workshop that was an introduction to copywriting. Because there are a lot of people that were, you know, they own their own businesses, and, you know, they weren't kind of experienced copywriters. So that was quite different from what I normally talk about. A couple of times it's literally been through my, you know, the fact that I know people on Twitter. Mark Whitson's been very kind. You know, he's kind of, referred a couple of people onto me. I was going to say Twitter's been very kind to me.
It's pretty deserved, because, you know, your tweets are really funny, and they're great. I mean, out of all sort of nonsense I have to go through on my feed, yours is a bit of a, you know, highlight.
Thanks.
That's amazing. And do they pay you to do these
talks? Well, yes and no. Yes for the last one. But because, you know, particularly for the international stuff, because it's so far away, basically it ends up that, you know, they pay for my travel expenses. Which is great. That's fine. It's not an insignificant expense. And so, for example, I mean, Tim, as you know, I do the Medicine Avenue podcast with Tim Jones. He managed to get us press passes to Cannes, and I can't go because I just can't justify the flights and so on.
Yeah,
so that's a shame. It's a problem when I'm so far away.
Does that mean there's a spare pass going?
I think it might be. You should call Tim.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, all right.
I've got a free ticket anyway.
But maybe we could give it away to someone.
Maybe you could.
Some junior or somebody who can. Okay. Anyway, we'll do a shout out. Anyone wants some advertising health free ticket, even though it's not for me to give away, just get in touch. And forward it on to Tim and Ryan.
Yeah.
And I suppose you could accept some bribes, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm all for bribes. Really good. Yeah. Bribes are good.
Yeah. 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 I'm with you on that. But I think that's quite incredible, because I've obviously made a couple of notes down as you've been talking. And, you know, we sort of go back over, 20 years where you're, you know, I guess it's over 20 years where you're sort of, you know, in a hospital, and you're sort of treating patients who are ill and all those sorts of things, and you've got this dream to basically write and do something more creative and more different. And you sort of fast forward to where we are today, and as I say, I don't think there's anyone with a larger or more interesting Twitter following and account as you, and you're basically going all around the world telling others how to how to write and be creative. I mean, that's quite nuts, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah.
It's like, nah, it's all right. Yeah,
no, I agree with you. I agree. And even a few years ago, that would have sounded pretty fucking crazy. I've been lucky. I've been really lucky because I think the role that I went into at Wellmark is kind of very, very different from what I'm doing now. And, you know, it started out as a very technical medical writing role. And I've gradually moved more into this creative direction role. And I think, you know, I can't overstate the part that Twitter has played in it because I've just been exposed to this, you know, this massive community that I wouldn't have been exposed to otherwise. Been an interesting journey.
I mean, one observation that I can make, and you can correct me if I'm wrong again. I mean, Twitter is a medium, right? And there's lots of people I know who are on Twitter, but they still don't have the following that you have. And maybe it's been an accident or maybe it's been intentional, but I don't know. You can tell me either way. But what I think what the genius of what you've managed to do is basically create a brand for yourself. And it's something that I've observed since I've been in the industry is that when I was growing up and, you know, you had people like Trevor Beattie or Dave Droger or John Hegarty and blah, blah, blah. It wasn't an accident that you were hearing from these people. It's because they had they were looking after their own brand. You know, of course they were working for agencies and making clients' brands famous and all those sorts of things. But they were obviously quite conscious about their own brand and making sure that they were treated as a brand within their own right. And I think that I'm just using that as a parallel for you because certainly within health, I suppose it's a broader point to the overall advertising industry too. There are fewer people today who treat themselves as brands, as the likes of Trevor Beattie and John Hegarty, etc. But you certainly stand out because you have behaved like a brand. Do you know what I mean? And the way that you clearly put a lot of time and a lot of effort into that. So yes, you're saying it's luck, but you know the harder you work, the luckier you get. I mean, you are, I would say, you're a brand in your own right. And do you think that's, I don't know what I'm asking here, I'm making more of a point rather than the question, but I think that's where your success has lied. Twitter definitely has been a very successful outlet for you, but it's because you basically carved a tone of voice and it's just good. I think you've tapped into something that everyone relates to and everyone probably wishes they could say, or you just said it first, that you've said it better or you've said it funnier or whatever.
Yeah, or said it in a way that was more likely to harm my future career prospects. Yeah, that's true. it's an interesting one because I certainly never set out to create a personal brand because, when I first went onto Twitter, it literally was because a colleague of mine had encouraged me to do it because she said, you like writing short little snappy things. You know, Twitter would be great for you. And I was like, fucking Twitter, what the fuck? Like, you know, isn't it just for morons who, you know, don't, you know, they've got too much time in their hands and blah, blah, blah. I was so anti. Anyway, so I got on. It certainly wasn't intentional, but I kind of realized over time that there was people appreciated, being distinctive, I suppose is maybe the word, and sort of having a point of view about certain things. And yeah. And so I tried not to be too broad. You know, I didn't sort of tweet about what I was having for breakfast and all that sort of stuff, you know, and all that kind of personal stuff that people talk about. So I tried to be professional but kind of irreverent, if that makes sense. That became a bit of a personal brand, if you like.
Yeah, and I know you sort of made it as a throwaway comment at, you know, costing you future jobs or whatever, but you know, I mean, I think again, this is just my own personal opinion, but there are so many people within our industry, and I'm broadening this beyond health. I'm just in the general advertising industry, is that there are a lot of people who all sound the same. Mm. I mean, you know, everyone is using the same jargon, the same buzzwords, and everyone's sounding like a politician or like a robot. Mm. And it, I must say, it is refreshing to hear somebody who's just saying it as they see it and speaking in normal language and just saying what everyone's thinking, but it perhaps just don't have the balls to do it in the public forum that you have. And yeah. You know, somebody said something the other day which, you know, was very inspiring, and it was, you know, a principle's not a principle until it costs you something.
And if
that does mean, yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And you know, if that means that it does cost anything down the line in terms of future employees or whatever, they're not the right people who'd get the best out of you anyway. So, you know, who cares? So,
yeah. Well, yes, and I think I'm in an unusual situation in some ways, because I think if I worked for, you know, a big holding company, I probably wouldn't have that kind of leeway. But because, you know, because we're basically unknown, and I kind of get a bit of, yeah. I'm allowed to kind of do what I want to some extent, which is nice.
Yeah, but I mean, I think I would certainly urge anyone who's listening to this, to whether they work for a holding company or not, to be more like you, I guess. Not obviously rip you off, but just be themselves and just try and. I mean, it's something that I do try and at the agency, you know, when I'm sort of catching up with people, the one thing I always try and instill in them is, you know, at the end of the day, it's not your title that's going to make you famous. It's always going to be the work. But obviously, if you can treat yourself as a brand, and now I do use you as one of those references.
Oh, really?
That's yeah, I do definitely.
You're limiting your junior's career prospects, but yeah, well done.
There are others, obviously, but you know, most people follow you anyway. So it's good to have a reference of somebody who's actively working in the industry. But more importantly, I think, maybe not more importantly, but as importantly, they're looking after their own brand. And so, you know, whatever happens tomorrow, I mean, you know, you probably, I guess, would think this is true. For whatever reason, you know, come Monday morning or whatever it is, you walk into, you know, back into the agency and like, you know what, we're closing it down, or everyone's going to go, you know, people are going to know that your brand will be protecting you in your next opportunity, right? And it's not going to be your title and I've worked in the industry for 35 years and boring. It's your brand that's going to be your parachute. And I don't think there are enough people who sort of do that. And actually, in many respects, there's a side effect, because you're essentially making our industry better. You're giving it a voice. You're giving it a personality. You're showing that there is a mix of diversity and humor and wit and a different way of thinking about the world within our industry in a public forum. And that can only be an amazing thing, right?
It is tough, isn't it? Yeah. But you're absolutely right. You know, I mean, particularly working for a small industry, you never know. Never know what's around the corner, because, you know, you go through a few tough months and you know, it starts to get a bit dire. But I must say, I haven't really approached it with that intent. It's more that I just enjoy, you know, being on Twitter and, you know, being a bit, taking the piss out of people and stuff.
But well, you do it very well. Could you sort of impart any advice to anyone who perhaps, maybe they are a doctor and they're sort of randomly listening to this, or I don't know, you know, could you give any sort of advice, I guess, of things that you've learned since you've been in this industry?
Well, probably the first thing, which this is actually, this is secondhand advice from my first creative director, who I mentioned earlier, I think it was about a week into my job. I was stressed about something or other. And I was like, I'm pretty worried about this. She said, well, is anyone going to die because of this? And I was like, no, probably not. She was like, well, think back, you know, like a few weeks ago you were working in a hospital and if you made, one of your decisions may well have ended up with someone dying, but no, that's not going to happen this time, is it? I was like, no. She goes like, well, maybe you should just go home and not worry about it. So yeah, it kind of stayed with me that, yeah, no one's going to die. So there's that. I mean, it is like, you know, the responsibility is just of a completely different order. And the fact that, I enjoy what I do now. You know, I like going to work and that was kind of the – almost, you know, that's pretty much the case from the time that I changed career. I suddenly realized that you could actually go to work and not kind of feel this sense of dread about what was to come. So that was nice. And there is really this opportunity for being creative if that's the way that you want to go.
Out of interest, sorry, this is going a bit on a tangent here. So as a doctor, right? So you're pretty aware of drugs that you prescribe and on the market and all those sorts of things. Mm. When you made the move into, so you know, you were talking about your first or second week in the agency, when you came across any drugs or any brands that you had to work on, were there any ethical dilemmas within you that made you go, do you know what? I know that this isn't as good as that other drug over there, and now all of a sudden I'm meant to, you know, construct an argument to make somebody who used to be like me or one of my, you know, past colleagues reconsider, knowing that it's probably not the best decision for them to make. Were you ever in that situation?
No, fortunately I wasn't, but I did have that concern. Going into the job, I was like, well, there was kind of that nagging feeling that, you know, are there going to be ethical issues that will arise here? Fortunately, I didn't. And in fact, one of the first drugs that I worked on was a psychiatry drug, that I'd been prescribing literally weeks earlier.
Oh, wow.
But one that I believed in and had been prescribing. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a problem. But I can see why.
So anyway, it was the opposite.
It was like, and also, you know, I felt very comfortable with this drug, and I knew that it was, you know, that it helped people and so on. So there wasn't really, it wasn't an issue. But yes, I fully understand that it could have been. I was kind of fortunate, I suppose.
That's really cool. Mm. And I have got this sort of question that I ask everyone. Like, you know, what were your worst meetings? But I imagine because you're such a sort of Jedi in terms of the industry, I guess they just roll you out as like Yoda, and everyone, all clients just go, if that's what you're saying, it's fine.
No. If that's how I've come across, that it's been highly misleading. No, I've had some horrible meetings. Yeah.
So, really?
Yeah. Oh. So, okay. So probably the worst one was that we were invited in to present our credentials, basically, by this client, kind of someone that we knew who'd been in another job. Anyway, she invited us in, said, come and present our credentials. And the meeting was with her and her CEO. And the CEO kind of made it very, very clear from the outset that she did not believe in marketing.
Great.
And she told us that, like, you know, from the beginning. Basically said, I don't know why you're here. And then berated us and the client, like, throughout the whole meeting.
Oh my God.
Asked us to explain their business model to her. And kind of like we're in an interrogation or something. And then kind of belittled us for not getting it exactly right and questioned what, you know, why it was all happening. And anyway, yeah, anyway, we never heard from them again. So that was fun. and I believe the client got fired shortly after. So yeah, it was horrible. What else? Oh, we had a pitch not that long ago where we were told that we had a very, very strict time limit. So it was like, I don't know, it was half an hour. And, you know, it was a proper pitch. It was a proper pitch. We were like, what the fuck? That's not long enough.
Half an hour.
Yeah. Oh, and so anyway, it was going to be to the minute and so on. And then one of the directors, there were about 15 people in there in the meeting, and one of the directors basically just interrupted us halfway through and asked us questions for 10 minutes. And so, you know, obviously it destroyed our timing and everything. And then as we were leaving, I managed to spill my glass of water all over myself and all over the floor. So, you know, left it just to make sure of it.
Yeah.
So we didn't.
Did you win it?
Nah, we didn't even get asked.
Okay. Yeah.
So no. Well, no, I'm Jedi. I'm
glad we're not the only ones. All right. but they make for funny meetings, I guess, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny stories.
Yeah. It's morale building. It's culture building.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I get, you know, there's scenarios that you can't plan for and there's not much you can do when you're in them anyway except for just know that, you know, you're just going to go for a couple of drinks afterwards and just cry.
Exactly.
That's all really good.
One thing I did want to say, just in terms of kind of creative inspirations in healthcare, because I don't think we really talked about that. Firstly, is the stuff that you've done, particularly that the Secret CEO campaign that you did.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay, which I believe
that was yours, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was our agency. Yeah.
I think I mentioned to you on Twitter that there was a campaign in Australia that was very, very similar in intent not that longer. Yeah. Yeah, and I was like,
When did you tweet? What was that this year? Did you tweet me that this year?
Yeah, it was only a couple of months ago, which it was a great campaign, but I was like,
What was it? What did they do? Sorry, my brain's just gone to mush.
It was Serial Killer. It was for like heart disease, and it was like, you know, what is this?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. It's great. Sorry, it's really good. I remember. And I was like, that looks very familiar. maybe they were influenced.
It was, I mean, I don't know if anyone really knows much about that project, but it was a great little film. But what was really cool about it, which I don't think a lot of people know, is so we set this thing up called The Lab to get, you know, these sort of underprivileged kids into the agency and try and give them a chance to have a career. And we got this malaria no more brief one of our planners' mates, you know, sort of basically ran the marketing there. And we just gave the brief to these two young girls, basically, who came through the lab. One was a designer and one was training to be a planner. And they basically took the brief, they wrote it themselves, they found the insight. And that film actually wasn't meant for going online or YouTube or anything like that. It was actually meant to go at the start of a PowerPoint presentation for Malaria No More sales reps. Yeah, they have these sales reps that go in to talk to big organizations and the CEOs, and they get these companies to fund them, and that seems to work really well for them. So this was just meant to set up their PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, they'd written the scripts themselves, they had sold it in themselves, they had got the director to shoot it for free and all that sort of stuff. And you know, they did it. And I think, you know, I didn't do much other than contribute a cigar. I gave them one of my cigars, which I'd got as a birthday present, and I don't really smoke, so I gave it to them.
So this is basically all the cliches about, you know, credits on, you know, on awards. Yeah, right. So that's what you did. Right. That's creative.
And it was amazing. Yeah. I know. Mental, isn't it? And it, what was really proud, apart from it being a really nice film, but it was done by, you know, these young girls who'd only been in industry for 18 months.
That's amazing.
So that was really cool.
Yeah, really
That's the best bit about that whole project. Obviously, you don't put that in the write-up.
No, of course.
Yeah.
No, that's a good story. Good story.
Sorry, tangent. It's about you. What else inspires you?
Well, most of the stuff that Area 23 does.
they're an amazing agency now, aren't they?
In the last couple of years, just amazing stuff. Particularly the hardest crossword that they did. I don't know.
Yeah,
that was just amazing.
that's the sort of
stuff that you just, you know, the classic, you know, I wish I'd done it kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think the industry has changed for the better, certainly over the last,
no doubt,
you know, 10 years or so. And I think there's a lot more, I think awards for all the criticisms that they have, I think without them really, they, you know, everyone's pushing, aren't they? Everyone's pushing the standards. Everyone's investing in more talent in their agencies because it's just become a lot more competitive, and that competition has just driven standards to just get better. So,
no doubt.
So, Ryan, there's music.
That means the end.
Doctor, sorry. Why am I calling you Ryan? Doctor.
Professor.
If I'd have known you're a real doctor, I would have brought some of my sort of health issues to you. We could have done a phone-in. But anyway, next time. We'll do that. I just want to, you know, sincerely thank you for your time. I think this has been brilliant, actually. I hope everyone else has enjoyed it. Thank you so much. And hopefully, we'll see each other very soon.
Thank you, Shahid. It's been an honour.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Take care, Ryan.
See ya.
Cheers.